So, episode two, thanks for everyone that listened to episode one, and thanks for all the feedback. I'll keep plugging away. Seems like people, at least whoever reached out to me, enjoyed them, so we'll keep going. But I think, we'll mix it up too in the future with doing some different stuff, maybe not just military related. Some people had reached out and given me some pretty good ideas, so we'll try those out too. But today, we're going to talk about probably my favorite person when it comes to like the local history, military type stuff, someone that's had a huge impact. And although he wasn't born around here, he ultimately lived here and died here, and that's Baron von Steuben. So Steuben Hill, obviously named after the guy. If you go up to Star Hill Road, he actually has a monument up there, and there's a house that, it's a reproduction, but it looks exactly like the house that he lived in on that same property. And his gravesite's actually behind it. It's a state site. It's actually really nice. It's maintained. It has picnic tables and, grills, and there's stuff that as you walk around the property you could read. Definitely recommend going to it. And we'll talk about this guy a little bit. So we know him as Baron von Steuben, but his real name, potentially, it says that they're not really sure if this was his full name or not, just because he was kind of a over-the-top type guy, but it'd be Frederick Wilhelm Heinrich Ferdinand Konst or von Steuben. And he was born in Germany. He was actually in the Prussian military for 17 years, ultimately getting out as a captain. So he he was definitely involved in some conflict at the time under Frederick the Great's leadership. The Prussian military was one of the kind of the top military forces in that time frame in the early mid 1700s, and he served 17 years as an officer in their military and participated in pretty much like every military campaign at that time for them. It's not exactly known why he stepped down from the military, but a lot of things that I've read and things that I've looked at as I researched this was he had like a disagreement with somebody, or he wasn't liked by one of his leaders. And as the Prussian military downsized after years of conflict, there wasn't a place for him anymore. So he ultimately became the court chamberlain of a small German principality just to, obviously make money and stuff. And sometime before the American Revolution, that prince who ran that principality that he lived in and worked for ultimately started running out of money, and he started looking for new work. He floated around all the other foreign militaries, kind of struck out across the board, and then that's kind of where we see his entry into American conflict slash American life. And that was like 1777. Our man Ben Franklin and Dean Silas, or sorry, Silas Dean, I always get that confused, but they were in Europe looking for support. They were working on deals with the French, get the French treaty so they could help them. They're out over there looking for resources. They're looking over for maybe some loans, get some money. And Steuben, after striking out of all these other military deals, he heard they were probably in France, and he started the voyage to go meet them. So when he meets Franklin and Dean, they were pretty impressed with him, right? Like, this guy, he definitely exaggerated his credentials. He said that he was a general in the Prussian army, and he worked directly with Frederick the Great, and he was his right-hand man. And the France Minister of War and the Foreign Minister also vouched for this guy in a letter to the United States. So Franklin and Dean sign a letter. The two French leaders send a letter to the United States, and the United States is like, okay, we'll take this guy. Leading up to that point, they were kind of over foreign leadership in their military. We had a bunch of people that were kind of in the same boat. They were looking for ways to make money. They were in militaries, whether they're retired or they got kicked out, and they saw an opportunity to come to the United States and make some money. But the Continental Congress was over that. They were done with it. It didn't really work for them in many cases. And some it did, but they were just paying these people and they weren't producing how they wanted them to produce. So, you know, Congress said, okay, we'll give this guy a shot. And like I said, in reality, he really wasn't a general in the Prussian army. He was a captain. But he was definitely a competent leader. He was definitely battle-hardened. And it was considered. So his little stint where he, you know, basically Franklin, Dean, those two French guys, and him, it said that he was a general and all these other things, was considered possibly one of the greatest public deception ever perpetrated in a good cause, in a book by Thomas Fleming on George Washington and the Battle of Valley Forge. It really was. I mean, if you see and look at what this guy did moving forward, they would have never gave him a chance if they thought he was just a captain in the Prussian army and things like that. But the impact that he had on American history, well worth that little white lie. And, you know, we'll see why in a couple minutes here. But he ends up coming to the, you know, the colonies at the time. I wouldn't even say necessarily the United States. I mean, it's, I guess it technically was because the Declaration of Independence and everything. But he comes to North America. He lands in New Hampshire in December 1777. And he meets up with John Hancock and Sam Adams, has dinner. They talk about their kind of vision moving forward and what they need out of the military. And then he packs up, goes to York, PA, which is the capital at the time of the United States. Philly was originally the capital, but the British had taken the capital over. So they had to move the new capital to York temporarily. And he stood in front of Congress, and he knew they didn't want him there, right? Like, they didn't want a foreign leader. They were giving him a shot. So he said that he would work for expenses paid, and he only wanted his salary back paid if the Americans ultimately won the war. So Congress is like, well, damn, you know, we don't really want this guy, but I mean, he's really working for nothing. Like, we're going to pay for his food and for him to travel. And, you know, if it works out for us, then we'll pay him at the end, right? So kind of a win-win for both of them. Steuben was probably bankrupt in Germany where he lived. So, I mean, he was also kind of fleeing that kind of struggle that he had there. So this was a good opportunity for him. It's a good opportunity for the, you know, the Continental Army, who needs some kind of leadership. After he goes to Congress, he goes to Valley Forge, meets up with Washington. All right, so Valley Forge, terrible winter that year that they were camped out. You know, the military's definitely demoralized. People are probably deserting. As people rotate out, they're not coming back. It's not looking good for us, right? You know, if it continues that way, we're probably not going to win. We've suffered some pretty big defeats in the months leading up to Valley Forge. And there needs to be a savior of some sort, or somebody who can right the ship. So within 2 weeks, Washington liked the guy. I mean, Washington spoke really highly of him. If you ever read stuff about or things that Washington has said about Steuben, it's always, for the most part, positive. And he credits him a lot with the successes moving forward from Valley Forge. He liked him so much that he made him Inspector General of the Continental Army within the first 2 weeks of him being assigned under Washington. And his first task was to inspect the condition of the whole Continental Army. And after he did that, he came back. It didn't take long because he, you know, I mean, it only took a couple paces around to see how terrible the conditions were. But after a couple weeks, he reported that it was far less than appalling. And then Washington said, okay, well, then go fix it. So this is where we see Steuben's probably first major impact when it comes to the American Revolution. So he begins teaching, you know, Prussian-style military drills to the Continental Army, who up to this point is not a professional military. I mean, they're not, you know, like the British or the French, who for hundreds of years have had this, you know, big military and things like that. Most of them were just militia or people that got drafted or volunteered and or are serving for somebody who had money so they didn't have to. And there was no uniformity, there was little discipline, there was little conformity. So he began teaching like discipline, uniformity, something as simple as hygiene, like wash your clothes, wash your body, brush your teeth, you know, clean your weapon. All those things started getting drilled into, you know, the Continental Army. And he started doing a lot of drill and ceremony, marching. Everything was like exact. And it says in a lot of stuff about him, you know, it was kind of cool researching him for this one, but he spoke almost no English, but he memorized the commands for marching, and he would yell out the command. But on occasion, he would either say it in German, French, or he would say the wrong English one. And then he would end up swearing and, you know, getting all frustrated. And it actually says that this really actually helped the morale of the Continental Army, because they saw this, like, you know, this general who typically officers aren't tasked with training troops. You know, normally they lead, they aren't training. That's normally a non-commissioned officer thing. So you had this officer who, you know, for the first time, these guys haven't really had officers teach him stuff like that. And he's got this, you know, extravagant uniform on that he brought with him from Germany. And he's swearing in all different languages, you know, and they found it kind of comical. But they bought into what he was doing. So, you know, he definitely started increasing morale right away. And, at some point in the early weeks of him doing this, an army captain volunteered to translate his commands into English for him, and everything started going much more smoothly. And as they started with a smaller group, they, you know, they started at like a company size element, so maybe 100 to 200 guys, and they ended up getting up to a battalion and then further from there. So they started spreading their reach and training more and more soldiers. As this captain was translating everything, he also wrote it into a book, like a manual. And this would be the second greatest accomplishment by far at the time for him. But overall, this will be Steuben's greatest accomplishment probably in his life that had ever happened to him. And at the end, I'll tell you why that him writing this stuff down in the book was so important. But, you know, so he's already come in. Boom, he's Inspector General. He starts training everybody. Second thing, they start writing down this manual so there's some kind of uniformity that someone could read from it and then train other people, because Steuben can't be out there training every private that comes into the military, right? It has to get passed down to the non-commissioned officer side so they could start, you know, teaching people and kind of expanding from there. And, so during Valley Forge, well, in Valley Forge, somewhere in like the May timeframe, Washington declared a day of celebration because the United States signed a treaty with France, and the word of that treaty had reached Valley Forge. So he released it in like kind of like a public statement and said that we need to celebrate for a couple reasons. One, to let the soldiers know, like, hey, the French are coming like they said they were. And then two, you know, it'd be a morale boost. Like, you're getting your butt whooped, and now one of the bigger militaries is actually going to come help you out. And a group of people who historically have hated, you know, the king and everybody in Britain at that point. So at 9 a.m. on May 6th, 7,000 soldiers lined up on the parade ground, rank by rank, and General Steuben marched them around a parade field in front of a group of people and actually had them do like a shooting where they get line by line and they all shoot at the same exact time. And at this point, that would never have been fathomable for this group of soldiers. They're so undisciplined. And now he had 7,000 in this one group doing it exactly perfect. So from a leadership perspective, everybody looking at it is like, okay, like, we can actually win this thing. We got the French coming, and our force is looking pretty good. So they say that actually within 2 weeks, the first groups that Steuben started training were already looking like professional troops in other countries. And Steuben, in a lot of his like books and stuff that he wrote about, he said the United States soldiers are so much different from the Prussians, the French, and the British, because in those countries, when you tell them to do something, you just tell them to do it and they do it. And he said in the United States, the problem was up front, if you told them to do something, they would always be like, why? Right? So he learned very early on in his training that if he wanted something done, he would tell them why it had to be done, and then they would do it. But he's like, by doing that, you kind of got more buy-in, right? Because you told them what they needed to do and why they needed to do it, then they would do it. When you would just tell them, hey, do this, you're not going to get the same thing from it. And he said initially it was kind of like a problem, but after, once he realized he had to just tell them why it needed to be done, they ended up doing it much better. And he thinks that it's actually a better kind of trait that they had, you know, kind of asking why and things like that. I definitely see it today too. Like, I mean, I was probably the same way when I was like a junior soldier, even now as like a senior leader. I definitely ask why, probably more than I should, but I just want to know, right? It's easier for me to complete something if I know why you want me to do it, or what the end state ultimately is. So, let's see here. Let me look at my notes quick. Yeah, so 2 weeks after that celebration, there was actually about 2,300 Continental soldiers who went on the outskirts of Philadelphia to observe the British evacuate the city. And a surprise British attack attacked that force. It was led by General Lafayette. Same thing, like most of these names are cities in New York at some place or some way. Some area, right? Everybody, all these main actors that we see in generals and stuff. So this was like probably Steuben's third impact of the war, third greatest impact. He took his formation of soldiers and he actually kind of went and saved Lafayette. And that was at the Battle of Monmouth. It's kind of the last major battle in the northern states. The American troops showed their new discipline. They stood their ground, you know, against the British. They didn't retreat, and ultimately the British retreated. And it's noted that Monmouth vindicated Steuben as an organizer, not only as a leader and a trainer. So, like, he's starting to get this clout, and, you know, his reputation is just continuously growing within the Continental Army and in the new country. Steuben, you know, he served in the military for the remainder of the war and even after the war a little bit. And then he ultimately retired. And this is why he is mentioned in this area, because when he retired, the then governor of New York, granted Steuben a huge wilderness estate in the Mohawk Valley, which we now know is Steuben Hill, Star Hill Road, where his actually house is, right? So he was given this huge swath of land. He lived there till he died in 1794. He was 64 years old. Obviously, he was extremely important in the Revolution, right? Like, without Steuben, you could argue the Continental Army doesn't win after Valley Forge. They don't win another battle. Obviously, that's hard to prove, but, you know, just looking at the impacts that he had and the things that people say about him in the history books, you know, that's, for the amount of like publicity and credit he gets, does not even remotely touch the impact that he had on the overall revolution as a whole. One of the greatest things though that he did was when they translated that stuff into that book right before he retired, he actually published a book, and in that book was all the drill and ceremony stuff, all of the weapons kind of cleaning, all those basic soldier skills. And that book that they translated early in Valley Forge, and then he ultimately refined post-American Revolution, is what the Army knows as the Army Blue Book. If anybody's been in the Army or anyone has been close to people in the Army, when somebody goes to basic training, they get the Blue Book. And the Blue Book has your basic soldier tasks, like how to march, how to do these little things that you need to know how to do in order to learn all the other stuff. And that blue book is still used today. Obviously, parts of it have changed, but the drill and ceremony section is still almost identical to what Steuben had originally published in his. So if you go to like the Infantry Museum at Fort Benning, there's a whole section dedicated to Steuben as the father of the American infantry for the tactics that he put in the book. I mean, that's awesome. You have this a guy whose monument is in the Utica area, who died here, whose book is still used today, you know, 250 years later, and millions upon millions of soldiers have read this book. And I just don't think he gets enough credit. So that's why I did this one on him today. And, you know, there was, I'm not exactly sure who said it, but just when I was doing the research on this, the person was quoted saying, "Though his name is little known among Americans today, every U.S. soldier is indebted to von Steuben because he created America's professional army." So thanks for listening. If you listen to the second episode and the first, if you're on Spotify, give me a follow. If you're on the other platforms, you can follow me on there too, but I'm not exactly sure which ones I'm on yet. I think there's like 5 or 6 of them, and some of them I've never heard of. So, you know, just feel free to follow, like them if you can, and I appreciate it.